Lauren said that she's at that stage in her career where she is privileged enough. She's in a privileged enough. She's in a privileged enough. I fucking can't even fucking
you got
say.
Take your time, Gav.
You got it.
Time.
Come on. Come on.
Lauren she's said okay that enough. She's at. Lauren said she's at that fucking bullshit. Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of Films on Trial. I'm Gav.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Dave.
And this week we continue our best of 2023 season as we look at some of the biggest films of 2023 and we put them on trial. This week we're looking at one of the biggest rom-coms of the year. That's right, we'll be putting No Hard Feelings on trial. Is it Sturdy and Bevan?
No, here we go.
Is it?
Couldn't even get through the first one. Jesus Christ. Come on.
Is it Sturdy and Virile?
Yep.
Or is it Flaccid and Impotent?
Oh, Christ. Just the lowest hanging fruit straight away, eh? That sets the tone well.
Yeah.
The tone has been well and truly set, my friend. Essentially, will this film be placed on our esteemed hit list or our steaming shit list? But before we go on to the trial, let's talk about our last film on trial, which was the gory horror film Evil Dead Rise, which was judged by the notoriously weak-stomached Austin, who deemed that the film should be placed on the hit list. Ozzy has since gone away and watched the film, so did he make the right call, yes or no? Austin.
What a film. Absolute. I mean, obviously I'm not into scary films, but what a film. It was very, 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 very good, very unexpected, and I'm still cleaning up my undies.
Well done, man. It must have taken you a while to write. Now on to the trial itself. All of the roles have been picked out of the hat at random, and all of today's insults are descriptions of the best rollerblades for all levels according to experts from goodhousekeeping.com. So acting as defense and trying to put this film on the hit list is Dave. And Dave is just like the Liku professional inline skates.
How dare hard,
with ventilation holes in the back for breathability, and its celebrated feature being how tight it can get.
Ah, shit.
Oh, God.
And joining Dave is Ozzy. And Ozzy is just like the Impala Lightspeed inline skate. Definitely one of the more fashionable options on the market and described as having a super cute retro look.
That's fair. That's actually fair, yeah.
Much nicer than one you got there, Dave.
It's going to be much nicer than the one you get as well.
I bet, yeah, I bet.
And acting as prosecution and trying to get this film placed on their shit list is me, and I'm just like the Roller Derby Women's Aereo Q60 inline skates. A soft fit designed to make you feel even more comfortable during extra long rides.
No, nothing to say. Just nothing to say.
Now, just like real court advocates, the defense and prosecution will be making the best case for their roles. These may or may not be their real thoughts, though, so do stay tuned until the end of the episode to hear what they really think. And in the role of judge who has to decide which list this film should be placed on, hit or shit, based solely on the arguments put to him, is Alex. And Alex is just like the K2 Women's Alexis 84 Boa Skate. Looks good, designed for durability and speed in mind, and you can easily adjust your desired fit by the knob on the front.
Wow. I bet as soon as you saw that one, you were just like, great.
I did think when I started, I was like, oh, this is going to be one of the more challenging ones. I was like, how am I going to find descriptions of rollerblades that fit? I saw knob and I was like, yep, got it.
That's Alex.
Now, before we get started, I think that we should probably give the audience a bit of a better understanding as to what this film is all about. So let us spin the wheel of impressions.
That's a pig.
It is a pig.
I'm good at this.
It's landed on you, Dave. So here what we do is we read out the synopsis in the style of one of the cast or characters from the film. Lands on Dave. Alex, how would we like Dave to read this out? Bearing in mind, you've not seen the film. You don't know anything about it.
Well, yeah, but I'm on IMDb, so how's your Matthew Broderick,
Dave? Indistinct.
Everyone's got a Matthew Broderick. Come on.
What about a geeky, gawky teenager?
There you go.
So just be yourself.
Yeah, not bad. Oh, yeah.
I wish I was a teenager again. The rest of it's still true.
What about you, Jennifer Lawrence?
Natalie Morales. How's your Natalie Morales, Dave?
Yeah, not great either. This is a tricky one, to be honest with you.
How's your guy, cousin from the Bear?
Eben Moss Backrack.
Yeah. How's your Chicagoan?
Terrible. But you know, let's face it, there isn't a good impression to be found here. Unless you're a professional. So it's gonna have to be. You know, they're in downstate New York, aren't they? I just do kind of New York.
Classic New York. I think that's
good. Yeah. Offensive to anyone who's been to New York, lived in New York, knows what an actual New York accent sounds like. But
I think it's going to be offensive to more than just them.
Yeah,
yeah.
Is it On the Brink? Is it that one? Is it On the Brink?
Go for it.
Yeah. On the brink of losing her home, Maddie finds an intriguing job listing. Helicopter parents looking for someone to bring their introverted 19-year-old son out of his shell before college. She has one summer to make him a man or die trying.
You went a bit walking there, didn't you?
Yeah, a little bit.
You were very worried about
New York. He's from New York.
It's New York, but I could see you sort of retreated into safe territory and thought, no, I'll stick with walking.
Stranded.
Okay, so thank you very much for that, Dave. Alex, would you like to please kick off proceedings?
Yes, excited to hear about this. Like I say, I've actually not seen the film, and I've actually managed to avoid any reviews. Don't know a single thing about this film. I saw the coming on buses and was a bit like, oh, is that what I think it's about?
Coming on buses.
Yeah. All right.
I mean, it's pretty much like that, to be honest.
It was a Sid James film, wasn't it?
I did think that maybe, is that what it's going? Is it that sort of comedy romance? I don't know anything about it. So I'm going to go with DeVents. Mm-hmm. Tell me a bit more about what the No Hard Feelings is.
Okay. I mean, you're not entirely wrong. Some people would consider this sort of a sex comedy, I suppose, or a raunchy comedy. You'd be forgiven for thinking that, you know, if you liked, say, American Pie or Porky's, this might be your kind of thing. I actually think that isn't...
Sorry. But... just funny. Porky's is a
funny. Yeah, I'm just laughing. Like, are you saying, if you liked American Pie or Porky's...
No, you might be forgiven for thinking. Yeah. You might be
looking at who you're
thinking.
Speaking to.
And you know, this, you might think this film is for you because it does kind of fall into that category. It's not a rom-com. I'll make that quite clear now. It there's no romance to it. To be fair, there's no real sex to it, so it's not even a sex comedy. I would call it a relationship comedy of sorts, even though the relationship is kind of false. So this story focuses on Maddie Barker, played by Jennifer Lawrence. She's a 32-year-old, and her age is important. 32-year-old who lives in where's the film set? Montauk, New York. So imagine Montauk, New York, as being a bit like Cornwall in the UK. You know, it's kind of a residence for the rich to kind of get out of town, have holiday homes there. The locals have been completely priced out of the housing market. That's the kind of situation in Montauk, very much like Cornwall over here. So she's inherited a house. She can't afford to pay the tax on it. She's fallen behind in her payments. Her car's getting repossessed. She's working multiple jobs as an Uber driver, as a bartender, just trying to make ends meet and just trying to keep hold of this home that was left to her by her mom. And she sees a Craigslist ad. It's a Craigslist ad posted by Alison and Laird Becker, who are very wealthy, rich parents of Percy Becker, their 19-year-old son. And basically, they're looking for someone to seduce, date, and ultimately sleep with their son.
Okay. That's Jennifer odd.
Lawrence, Very hard.
I mean, come on, Alex. Whose parents didn't have that agreement in place?
No, I'm just saying, maybe it's not odd. I thought it was weird when mine did it.
That was pretty unusual. It's pretty unusual.
All I'm going to say, Alex, is have a conversation later on with Ro, and you're going to find some pretty hard truths.
In a way, Gav, that's how we met, isn't it? Through my parents. Anyway, carry on, Dave. Sorry.
So the reward is a Buick Regal. You get a car, essentially. So she goes to meet with her parents, and they're like a little perturbed by her age. They were expecting someone in their early 20s, their son being 19. She talks them around, and she decides that she gets given the job of, you're right. Keep that look on your face. Okay. You're absolutely right. Okay. And she gets given the job of seducing their 19-year-old son. Their logic being that on his way to Princeton, given that he's going off to Princeton now, this guy is very introverted. He's not really got many friends. He's had no relationships. He's never been part of the party lifestyle. Doesn't drink. He just basically volunteers at a dog shelter, and that's pretty much all he's got going on. They want to get him out of his shell because they're like, university is like key for networking, and he's got to be more confident. He's got to be more worldly. He's got to be able to socialize and mingle more, and they think this is the solution, essentially. Okay. Get to get him out of his shell. So essentially it's a very strange concept. And as the film goes along, she does take the job and tries to get to know Percy, tries to seduce him, but she doesn't succeed at first. He's not into the idea. She scares the hell out of him. Ultimately,
he has no hard feelings. Is that where no the tagline?
Essentially, so he has no hard feelings at this point. Okay. As the film goes on, they get to know each other. She starts to like him, not in that sense, but in kind of a protective older sister kind of way. And he develops a bit of a crush on her. See, but it's not really.
If anything, that's weird today. If anything, that makes it weirder.
But he develops a good feelings for her and kind of a crush. The truth comes out, they fall out, and ultimately the film ends with them patching things up, but deciding, you know what, they're much better off as friends, in a nutshell. And they go about their lives all for the better. Now, I'm going to address the elephant in the room here. Yeah, there might be a couple, but obviously this is quite an icky premise. That's one of the best reviews I saw. They were like, this is kind of an icky premise for a film. And a few people were like, God, just imagine if like the gender roles were reversed. It's like they'd never make this film. It'd never get off the ground. But some people say that for some reason, with the gender roles being the way they are, this actually works in a weird kind of way. And although it's icky, this is meant to be a cringe comedy. The whole reason why this film got greenlit was because Jennifer Lawrence was saying this was an actual Craigslist ad that they saw that inspired this film. And she was just like, what kind of woman answers that Craigslist advert? What kind of parents post that Craigslist advert? And she just thought, this is so bizarre and so weird that there has to be a film in here somewhere. Because she turned out to be, she's the producer of this. And she hired one of her friends, Jean Stupnitsky, to direct. And yeah, it is such a bizarre concept, but you're meant to cringe. One of the stars of the show, Andrew Barth Feldman, who plays Percy, the 19-year-old, says, you know, you're meant to be sitting with uncomfortable feelings. That's the kind of comedy it's going for here. It's going for cringe. There's no condoning Maddie, Jennifer Lawrence's character. There's no condoning Percy's parents. It's a very weird concept, a very novel concept, kind of thing you haven't seen in a comedy film before. But the film ultimately puts you out of your comfort zone, delivers an interesting concept, and actually manages to be funny. And although it's got that icky concept, which it is meant to be such, it kind of rolls with it. And there's a charm to this film, would you believe? We'll find out more as we go along.
Thank you, Dave. We will. Dave has addressed the elephant in the room there, which it is a very odd concept. Just to be clear, the prize is a car. She gets a car.
Yeah, it's a Buick Regal.
Okay. Okay.
It retails at what, like 25 grand, 35 grand?
Okay. Yeah, odd. Yeah. And she's 32 in the film. It's not just Jennifer Lawrence. She's
30. You know, I don't know what her actual age was. This only came out 2 years ago. I don't know how old Jennifer Lawrence is. But
yeah, no sure, but in the film. Right, okay.
19.
But, you know, we often say when we've done, you know, raunchy comedies or comedies about romance before, that it's very hard to be different and fresh. And to be honest, as a bizarre concept it is, it does sound like this, you know, it's odd, but yeah, it's out of your comfort zone, like Dave was saying, and it's fresh. So isn't that what we want, Gav?
I mean, no. you did hear the synopsis that Dave just gave you, didn't you?
Good point, Gav. No, that's fair. That's
fair. I mean, like, most of my argument is going to be about that. About what I fucking weird premises. Like, essentially, my main question throughout watching this is, what is this film? Dave mentioned before, it's not a rom-com, it's not romantic, and also that it's not really a raunchy sex comedy. But the thing is that it tries, the reason that Dave says it's neither of them, it's because it tries to do both of them, but massively misses the goal. It feels like it's some sort of critique of the abundance of these unpleasant, bad 80s sex comedies like Porky's that Dave mentioned before. But it's supposed to be funny because it's been gender swapped. Like, the older, down on their luck loser answers a Craigslist from a wealthy couple asking them to seduce their son. You know, it's just a fucking preposterous premise that wouldn't feel out of place in the 80s.
Can I just point out, it was a real Craigslist advert that inspired this film.
Yeah, just because something happens in real life, Dave, doesn't mean that we should make a film out of it.
I'm just saying, when you say it's preposterous, there's an element of realism to it.
Yeah, there is an element, but whether or not it turned into a raunchy sex comedy / coming of age story is another question entirely.
Part of me hopes it didn't.
So the thing here is that you have this older predatory partner, technically, played by the charismatic icon Jennifer Lawrence, as opposed to, if it was in the 80s, would have been played by some hairy, dumpy man.
Chevy Chase.
And then the impressionable awkward teen is played by an impressionable awkward teen, Andrew Barth Feldman. If it is a critique of those films, it feels far too late. I could understand if this film came out at the height of this sort of sex comedy era in the 80s, or I could even understand if it came out in the sort of late 90s, early noughties, when we had a return of the raunchy sex comedies like American Pie and Road Trip, in addition to the abundance of rom-coms that were written by men featuring these paper-thin, stereotype-heavy women. But, you know, this is the 2020s, when I feel like we're blessed at the moment with a great number of diverse and inclusive romantic comedies. And it just feels massively outdated, especially when this film received what a lot of rom-coms in this day and age don't, which is a full and wide cinematic release. Lots of marketing. As you said before, you saw it on the sides of buses. When you consider the great rom-coms like Always Be My Maybe, To All the Boys I've Loved Before, Someone I Used to Know, and Your Christmas or Mine, they were all sort of like straight to streaming films. It feels a little bit out of place that no hard feelings to potentially make criticisms of rom-com tropes when it received a much bigger platform and spotlight than most rom-coms do. Dave said before, a lot of the laughs are played for embarrassment. It's, you know, cringe humor, but you still can't escape the uncomfortable premise of the plot and the obvious 13-year age gap between the two characters, because it's constantly referenced. And with no real purpose, social commentary, or critique of note, you have to ask yourself if this film, as Dave said, would have been made if the roles had been reversed. And ultimately, I fear that in another 30 years or so, this will be regarded as creepy and as alien and weird as those comedies like Porky's and American Pie are deemed this day. Like Dave mentioned, the cringe humor which runs throughout it. Once again, I feel like it's massively missed the boat. Cringe humor, I think, has been and gone. We look at like the peak of cringe humor with like The Office, 40-Year-Old Virgin, Knocked Up, that type of stuff, the Judd Apatow films of the sort of mid-noughties. I feel like we've moved on since then, since COVID. I feel like the more successful comedies are more lighthearted comedies, nice comedies, feel-good ones like, you know, Ted Lasso and Abbott Elementary. So to have something like this, where it is sort of like cringe humor, and not particularly funny cringe humor as well, just sort of like awkward, embarrassing cringe humor, it just feels like it's, once again, wrong place at the wrong time. In conclusion, you know, this film tries to be part raunchy sex comedy and part gentle and heartfelt coming of age love story, but ultimately it achieves neither.
Wow. Okay. A lot of comments come in onto the comedy here. Now, you know, this seems like it sort of goes over lots of genres here. It's a sort of not a rom-com, it's more of a raunch comedy like we had in the 80s. Is it a critique? Is it trying to have some sort of commentary on that? Not quite sure. But the humor, this, you know, we all agree that this is meant to be a comedy. I think we agree that it's a cringe comedy, but is it funny? Aussie, is No Hard Feelings funny?
You know, I think it is funny. And, you know, some of what Gav's saying would be true if you're looking at it through that viewpoint, that it's trying to be the rom-com, that it's trying to be like a, almost like satire of a rom-com, but it's not. It's you know, it's meant to be. It's an awkward comedy, is what it's going for. The romance is separate. It's a lot like the Sarah Jessica Parker film, Failure to Launch, except for that very much is a rom-com. Whereas this, and that's based on, you know, and that's a quality film. You know, it's you want to put this in the same bar as, like, I mean, I'm on a defense here, right?
You're on the defense.
You know how I feel about Hubie Halloween, yeah?
True.
And that's a quality. That's, you know, that's one of our, that's Adam Sandler in his upper quartile. If you think about.
No, I will think about that.
They are funny. They are a mismatched couple in almost every sense.
Sure.
And in the end, you leave the theater thinking, that was good fun. I wouldn't mind watching that again with a beer. Nothing too serious. It's very much a nice, chilled out, entertaining watch. You know, it's pretty pleasant. And in terms of the humor, some of it is low-hanging fruit. But part of what makes it funny is because it's, you know, it's Jennifer Lawrence. It's people doing things which you wouldn't expect them to be doing in a theater release. So, you know, and some of the humor is, you know, a little bit preposterous. You know, there's part of it where she gets out of the water, like, fully naked and beats up a gang of teens who are picking on a guy. Like, you know, and And it's funny because that's completely unexpected. I think it's interesting is that it's a new take on, yes, a familiar trope or a familiar mismatch. But instead of it being how mismatched sort of like gender roles are and how different men and women are, and that, like, it's a playbook in order to bring someone out, this is a, you know, it's a generational gap. And that's why they keep hammering home the difference in that she is so much older than him. That's where the differences in the humor come from. And you can see that, you know, even more so today. That's why it's such a good modern film. You know, I see people in work of only sort of 10-year difference, and we speak completely different languages. And you must see it, you know, with work.
Yeah, but you don't try and seduce them for a car, do you, Ozzy?
Don't answer that, Ozzy.
No. Hopefully HR don't listen to this, but yeah. But seriously, this genuinely is quite funny. It's it doesn't go hard into, like, gender norms as such, but very much generational tropes, I think, is what makes it quite funny. Is it's less sort of a sexism issue and just more of a generation issue. But I think it genuinely is a funny film. Not the funniest film you're ever going to watch, but certainly a film that you could watch again.
Dave. Not the funniest film I'm going to watch. But
am I having to counter my own defense?
Ozzy said some pretty... He's sabotaged the ship there. He's sinking, Dave. I'm not going to...
Yeah, he has. He really has.
He's fired a lot of shots into your bow there, Dave.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that, to be honest with you.
Anything you're going to come back? Like, how is this...
I'm going to have to counter my own co-defense. Yeah, I think Ozzy's really done the film a disservice there, to be honest with you. This is actually a very funny film. And I don't know, yeah, it's Jennifer Lawrence is very adept at comedy. She's got the great mix of, like, she can deliver very sarcastic lines. Her comic timing is impeccable. And there's also that physical comedy. I mean, one of the most iconic scenes in this film is that naked beach fight, which, you know, Ozzy kind of glossed over and just said it was funny there, but it's actually such a well-done film, a well-done scene. It's not played for any sort of, you know, erotic content or anything like that, not in any way, shape, or form. It's a shock value thing, basically, because these teens, she goes off skinny dipping with Percy, these teens come along, they nick their clothes, and they run off with her, and they're like, oh, yeah, what are you going to do? And Percy's like, oh, what are we going to do? And as the audience, we're sat there, like, God, what are they going to do? It's like they're trapped in the sea now. They've got no clothes. Oh, no, they're not. Jennifer Lawrence gets out completely naked, batters these teens, throws sand in their face, punches them, kicks one in the groin, suplexes another one into the sand. And it's just like, you are shocked. Like, the teens are shocked. They're like, what the fuck's going on? Percy's thinking, what the fuck's going on? The audience are thinking, what the fuck's going on? It's a brilliantly done scene. And such a brave moment for Jennifer Lawrence as well. You know, she owns that scene. And it actually won a stunt award for the best fight scene, not in an action film. And they were just like, you know, if it weren't for the fact that it's so graphic, that scene would be shown like in all like Jennifer Lawrence acting montages for years to come. They can't re-show it because of its content. It's a brilliant scene and it's so funny and played for laughs brilliantly. And the dialogue of this film is actually very witty. We talked about cringe humor of The Office. Well, the director, Gene Stupnitsky, used to write for the American Office. So it is that sort of cringe humor you're getting out there, but you got some great lines in here and you got some very simple humor as well. You know, there's plenty of stuff that will make you laugh out loud and the stuff that will just raise a wry smile constantly throughout the film. Even just the argument about Laird, which is Matthew Broderick's character is called Laird. No, like a Scottish lord. But say it in an American accent and it's like, Laird? What, like a lasagna? It's like, no, Laird. Laird? Laird. Just say, call me Laird. I can't. It's that sort of throwaway line that Jennifer Lawrence just delivers with like perfect timing, and that's what makes this funny. The concept's bizarre, no denying it, but it's played for laughs so well and so intelligently, and it's the charm of its cast that really gets it over the line. And there's so many different variations of comedy in here as well. It doesn't just go for the low-hanging sort of bawdy sex comedy like those films I mentioned. Like I say, those are the films you might expect you're about to see. That's not what you're going to get. And that's why when Gav says, you know, it's neither a raunchy comedy nor a coming-of-age dramedy, and he says it achieves neither. No, it's a coming-of-age dramedy, essentially. And it's just masquerading initially in its marketing and its initial premise as a raunchy comedy. But that's not what you're going to get. You've actually got a film that plays it a lot safer than its concept might lead you to think, and plays it a lot smarter and with a lot more heart than you might be expecting as well. So there's a few surprises here.
Ooh, okay. You know, something I wouldn't be surprised at is Jennifer Lawrence giving a very good performance. And, you know, if she's the one, she's acted, she's done comedy before, very versatile, can do lots of different things. You know, you could argue that I'd watch a film just because, you know, that it's going to be pretty solid if she's producing it and she's in it. So, you know, that's a big plus point for it. Casting characters generally, Gav, you know, where does it go wrong?
I'm not going to argue. Jennifer Lawrence is one of the best actresses working today, which is why it's so head-scratching that she decided to pick this project. Lawrence said that she's at that stage in her career where she's in a privileged enough position to be able to work on whatever she wants. And for some reason, she really wanted to be part of this R-rated rom-com. And the thing is, as charismatic and funny as Lawrence is, she can't save the character. It's like trying to build a brick extension on a sandcastle. Maddie is quite an unlikable character at the beginning of the film, and she feels pretty underdeveloped throughout. She flits from these violent, foul-mouthed, bass-swinging tirades, although we do have some small moments of growth and realization that she needs to grow up and become a better person. It's all too fleeting, and it happens too late on in the film. So when we have our happy ending, not like that, when we have the happy ending at the end of the film, it feels a little rushed and undeserved. And the thing for me, what all great rom-coms need, and which this film doesn't have, is heart, like genuine heart. And as I said, there were a few glimpses here and there, but it's all too fleeting. And instead, it just skips on to more of the cringe humor. You know, we get a tender scene later in the film where Percy plays an instrumental piano rendition of Hall & Oates' classic Maneater to Maddie on the piano in a packed restaurant. Beautiful. And it honestly feels like it's just completely come out of the blue. And I thought, oh, this is quite a nice scene. And rather than building on this, it then goes straight back into the cringe humor. It goes onto a party where Maddie uses these outdated slurs. Percy throws up. It's like copy and paste from one of the American Pie films. And this is where the film falls down for me, is that there's a severe lack of chemistry between the two characters and technically between the two leads. This is understandable at first because they are polar opposites. He's a shy and awkward teenager. She's a confident and crass adult. And there's also, as Ozzy mentioned before, this generational gap that's constantly played for laughs, where Maddie is unable to understand that things have moved on since she was 19. So her attempts of wooing Percy are aggressive, bordering on manic at stages. And it doesn't make sense as to why Percy would want to date her in the first place. And as the film progresses, I don't feel like the chemistry builds at all, with the relationship feeling way, way too forced. And Dave mentioned before about the relationship between the two of them. As the film progresses, it tries to start showing that Maddie is developing feelings for Percy, but it feels like the writers didn't actually figure out what that relationship should be and how it would affect or be affected by the overarching plot. So at certain small points, it appears that Maddie is falling in love with Percy, but the overwhelming feeling is that it's more that she's developing, not necessarily romantic feelings, more friendship, or even as Dave said, the one I got from this, and it seems Dave did as well, is that or those feelings of like an overly protective sister, which is just fucking weird considering the premise and considering that she still continues to try and sleep with him as well. And it is at complete loggerheads with the narrative of the film, and making what was a dubious premise at first even more creepy.
So she develops sisterly feelings and is still trying to make
pretty much. And as individual characters, I think Percy grows to be a little more confident by the end of the film. Maddie matures a little. But at the end, the characters are still as polar opposite at the end of the film as they were at the start. It feels like there's a complete lack of growth at all. And no matter how good the actors are in those roles, if the characters aren't well written, you're not going to be engaged as an audience.
Some pretty powerful words there. Does seem like there's some good points, you know, Gav's saying, or, you know, the cringe humour, you got the funny bits, you know, talking about those, you know, the naked beach fight and stuff, and that's all good and well, but you haven't got this sort of overhanging story that ties it all in, that makes you actually care about the characters. Defence, why should I care about these characters? Is there any development?
Do you know what? I think that part of the point is that you don't need somebody to have a drastic transition for there to be character development. It's over a fairly short period of time. So she is a little bit older. She has a bit more of an understanding of where he's coming from, of this generational gap that she's missed, you know, and she's learned that through all of the different set pieces that have happened. You know, the first setup where she loses her car in the first place, you know, which is the whole reason for wanting the Buick. It's not like it needs to be a super, super pricey car. You know, we touched on that at the start, that, you know, it's a relatively low value price to be doing such an odd task. But part of it's because, you know, that was her livelihood. You know, she's a taxi driver. So there's this premise that all I need is that to get by to do the next thing. You know, she's somebody who's like jumps from job to job. So it's her, the transition between how she feels and how she behaves doesn't have to be massive for it to be a character development. And the same for him. The whole point of it was, his parents were, you know, obviously misguided in thinking that getting him laid or led would be what he needs in order to get by in university. But he's has growth throughout, you know, like Gav said, he has more confidence. He becomes someone who can advocate for himself. And you know, and we see not just him necessarily, you know, he becomes more of himself and a bit more confident. But we as the audience no longer see him as like this reclusive nerd sort of loser. You see him that actually he's got worth as he was. You know, he didn't have to change very much for our perception to change. And I think actually it makes the film a little bit cleverer than, you know, you would initially give it credit for. That it's full of slapstick, it's full of you know, quite preposterous humor throughout. So while it is, you know, it is funny and there are bits where are cringy, it has enough thought behind it. So I think it's a little bit unfair to say that there isn't enough guidance, enough development, or enough growth throughout. The characters are fleshed out. It's a, you know, it's a, I think it's actually a lot more layered layered than do the joke twice, just in case
you can't do the same joke twice.
Doing it, go for the hat trick, Ozzy.
I might save it for the flourish. So yeah, I think it's a lot more developed than Gav's making out.
Interesting. And Dave, I'd like to come to you just for a, there's a big point that Gav made there that just says, you know, especially in romantic films, whatever they are, there does need to be an element of heart to them. And I think the ones that don't work don't have heart to them. So So where's the heart in No Hard Feelings?
Oh, the heart is everywhere you're looking in No Hard Feelings. It's there to be found throughout. I agree with what Ozzy said, to be honest with you. There are character developments here. Both of them, although they're not drastic, like Ozzy said, they're more subtle, more nuanced than that. He's still, his parents, in a roundabout way, kind of got what they wanted. He goes off to Princeton much more confident, much more outgoing, much more at ease with himself. And he managed to do it without actually having to have sex with anyone. You know, the way they were thinking of bringing it about.
Good for him.
Exactly, good for him. Well, that's actually
a good
one of
arc.
The points.
Not one that
film.
Anyone wants to do, but good for him anyway.
It's one of the points of the film. The film actually takes a line against pressure in younger people, in this instance, young men, into feeling they have to have sexual relationships by a certain deadline or by a certain age. Like, his parents think that's going to solve all of his problems, you know, and it satirizes that concept, you know, that young men need to have sex as soon as possible, otherwise they're not going to be confident, they're not going to be outgoing, they're not going to be real men. You know, it kind of like turns that on its head and kind of makes fun of that whole idea, you know, which is kind of different for, like I say, a raunchy sex comedy, relationship comedy, whatever you want to call it. It's a different take. And the characters, I thought, have chemistry for days, you know, not in a romantic sense at all. That's the whole point. They're not meant to. You know, the age gap is mentioned throughout because it reminds you that even the director, the writers, Jennifer Lawrence, the stars of this are under no illusion that this concept is okay. You're meant to be feeling a bit, why would you agree to this? Why would you go through with this? But it kind of works with it because it keeps mentioning, it keeps reminding you of it. It's like, don't expect these guys to fall in love. That's not going to happen. You know, the age gap is too great. And sure enough, you know, they develop a friendship. That's what you see unfolding here. And they remain friends at the end of the film, which was good. And, you know, Maddie herself, even though Percy has his development, Maddie has hers. You know, she's been clinging on to this house in a place that she doesn't really want to live anymore. Because she feels she has to after she inherited it, and she kind of readjusts what she thinks about her life and her future, and she decides to move away from Montauk in the end. You know, she sells the house for a pretty low price actually to a friend of hers who actually wants to stay there, and moves away to California. You know, begins her life anew, which is kind of what she deep down wanted to do all along, and just didn't have that inner courage in herself to feel she should do it. There are developments here. And yeah, I think the dialogue between the characters, the fact that they are polar opposites and yet have this common ground they can find, you know, they've both got very immature and very differently immature preconceived notions about sex. And that themselves makes the characters quite interesting and the conversations that they have quite funny and witty and interesting in themselves. You know, it leads to some great dialogue, leads to some great comedy. And yeah, I think that there's some really genuinely laugh out loud funny moments here, some great performances. And yeah, I think everyone gels together really well. I think this shouldn't work. I come back to this weird concept of a film. This really shouldn't work on paper. And yet it does. And the heart is there throughout. You know, this is actually a coming of age dramedy. And it's actually quite a sweet film by the end. You know, you have a bumpy ride with, like we said, some full frontal nudity, some random assault on a beach, and, you know, so it's a terrible idea about how to get your son to lose his virginity. I don't know a good one, to be honest with you, let alone a terrible idea.
Yeah.
But then it's like, but yeah, this film is quite, got a sweet heart at the end of it, and it's quite a sentimental film in a lot of ways.
Okay. Excellent arguments, everyone. I have a lot to mull over. Unless people have some final points that they would like to finish with. Gav's shaking his head. Ozzy, Dave, any final ones we want to... Okay. No. Right, well, thank you very much, guys. I'm happy to move on to my quiz. And if you really enjoy my quiz and tell me I've done a really good job, that might affect my judgment in the podcast. So just
duly noted.
Keep laughing loudly and applauding me and say some nice things. Okay. good one, Dave. You get a point. So obviously I was writing a quiz about a film I hadn't seen and knew nothing about. From just a very quick look, I actually thought that Jennifer Lawrence was a prostitute in this film, and I've only been she's not. So I've written a quiz all about prostitutes in films.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I mean, you know, from just skimming the synopsis.
Exactly.
I did say the film is not what you expect, and that just proves it. So.
Thank you. But you
could easily be, you know, mistaken for thinking that she was a sex worker.
I mean, in a way, she's been given a car to have sex with someone. So, you know, there's an element to it, isn't there?
Still hard work.
I'll move on. Right, anyway. Question one. To prepare for her role as a prostitute in Leaving Las Vegas, Elizabeth Shue got to know prostitutes on the Las Vegas Strip. How did Nicolas Cage prepare for his role?
Did you just get really fucking pissed?
Yeah, he did. Point to Gab. To be fair to him, he also went to visit alcoholics who were in hospital and, like, you know, talked to them and interviewed them. But he also spent a good part of his time apparently just shit-faced. Something I didn't know is he didn't get paid for that role. He was only going to get paid if he got profits, and he got screwed by the company. So, yeah, interesting.
But he did win his only Oscar. So,
I know. I guess that makes it worthwhile.
All ended well.
And think about how much he's saved marketing on all of the subsequent films that he's made, some of the more terrible films he's made, when it says winner. Featuring Oscar winning actor Nicolas Cage.
He knows exactly what he's doing.
For a moment, I thought you were going to say, imagine how much he got for pawning that Oscar for booze. Imagine how much Jim Beam that got him.
Question two. Jodie Foster's performance in Taxi Driver as an underage prostitute Iris had some unintended consequences by inspiring who to do what, or should that be whom?
Oh shit! It inspired John Wayne something. I forgot his surname.
Not John Wayne.
John Wayne Gacy.
No. It inspired a certain guy to take a pop at Gerald Ford and try and assassinate the President of the United States. I can't remember his name. John Hinckley.
Hinckley. All right, Dave. I'm going to give you 1 point for that. He was actually trying to. Well, he actually did wound Ronald Reagan.
Not Ford.
It wasn't Reagan. Yeah, but apparently he said he was inspired by Jodie Foster to do it as well. She actually has never talked about it in interviews and refuses to do interviews to talk about it, because you just said she was a hapless bystander and, you know, a victim of it. It had nothing to do with her. Question three: what is the name of Julia Roberts' character in Pretty Woman?
Red?
Abigail?
No.
I mean, it's not like it's an iconic film from...
Vivian?
Hey!
Done.
Yes, it is. He's right.
Well done, Ozzy.
Katie got that one.
Katie, well done. Round of applause for Katie.
Drastically pointing at the coasters.
apparently, Richard Gere was very, very active in the first scenes that were being filmed, and Gary Marshall apparently came up to him and said, look, Richard, one of you moves in this movie and one of you doesn't. Guess which one you are. which I really liked.
And that's acting advice that he took on board for every subsequent film he ever appeared in.
Same with Richard Gere, actually. In what film did Richard Gere play an American gigolo?
American gigolo?
Yeah, well done, Gav. Point to Gav.
Can I say that both those roles and An Officer and a Gentleman are funny because they were all offered to John Travolta first and he turned them down, and then number two was Richard Gere.
Really?
Who's laughing now, though?
Neither.
yeah, to be fair, neither.
Okay, what film was based on the life of Aileen Wuornos?
Bam, bam.
Go on, Dave.
That'd be Monster.
It was Monster. The real life serial killer, Aileen Wuornos. How many victims did she have?
Ooh, bam. Three.
Five.
Aussie.
I mean, how many do you need to become a serial killer? I'm going to say seven.
Three and above.
On the nose. for Aussie. Well done.
Well done, Aussie.
Well done, I suppose. Yeah, well done, Aussie. she had seven, yes. Question five. Monica Bellucci plays a prostitute in the criminally underrated masterpiece, Shoot 'Em Up. What instrument... was she sorry, Gab, what was that?
sorry, I was laughing at something else.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Because it sounded like you were sniggering there, but
No. I just remembered another terrible Clive Owen film.
I've just googled Shoot 'Em Up. I got it mistaken with that one with Daniel Radcliffe in. What was that called? Guns Akimbo.
Guns Akimbo.
Yeah.
To be fair, they're quite interchangeable.
Dave, you just lost 2 points. What instrument of death cleverly bookends the film?
A carrot.
It is a carrot. He pops on through someone's eye and then uses it to shoot someone at the end. Well done, Gav.
Like the first John Wick in some ways.
John Wick.
I watched that film when I was recovering after a medical procedure, and I was very, very high on morphine at the time. And I still remember thinking it was shit.
Wrong. I actually, for such sort of like a throwaway action film, I got really passionate when we actually put this on trial.
Yeah, no, I'm joking. I didn't actually mind it. It made my recovery much better, actually.
Oh, 2 points. Right, number six. In LA Confidential, Kim Basinger plays Lynn Bracken, who is hired because of a resemblance to which Golden Age star?
Bam.
Go on, Dave.
It's Veronica Lake.
Well done, Dave. Good one. Very good one. Penultimate question now. Jennifer Jason Leigh plays Stevie, who is one of a few characters that offers Christian Bale's Trevor in The Machinist any comfort. Christian Bale probably has the record for the most weight loss when he took on the film. How much did he actually lose in pounds?
Oh, we had this one, didn't we?
72. Actually, what was his starting weight?
I think it was 100.
I think you're not far off. It's 72, are you?
Yeah, 74.
I thought.
I reckon he could lose me. He lost.
You say 78 then.
Okay. Anyone else?
I'm gonna go lower. What did you say? 72. I'm gonna say 68 then.
Well, Aussie gets it. 63.
Wow.
Right. Just so you know, there are two questions left and you are all tied at the moment. So there's a lot to play for.
Even me?
Even you, Aussie. I don't want to say that because I don't want
to... Oh, to be fair, I didn't lose any points for being a dick. So.
No, I know. You've been you've been well-behaved, Aussie. Ray-Bans, Wayfarers, were not selling that well when 1983's Risky Business about opening a brothel to pay for damaging your dad's car came out. By what percentage did sales increase?
After that film? Or
after the film came out.
2000.
I'm going to give it straight to Gav because that is exactly correct. It was 2000.
Wow.
Exactly. 2000%. Yeah. Okay. So someone could tie with Gav or he could win it. Last question. Shirley MacLaine and Jack Lemmon played a prostitute and a cop respectively in Billy Wilder's Irma La Dolce. But what other film did all three of those people collaborate on? Go on, Gav.
The Apartment.
Ah, and you get 5 points. Well done, Gav.
Well done.
Fantastic. You've won the quiz.
Brilliant.
How does it feel?
Can I just ask, was that quiz that you wrote about sex workers while you were in Amsterdam last week?
No, but it probably inspired it a little bit.
you took methods research to another level.
Not gonna lie, it's clearly been playing on my mind a little. That's probably subconsciously why I did that. Okay, I am also ready to deliver judgment on No Hard Feelings. Won't take too long, I don't think, this one. You know, the concept is pretty wild, but it does spin the wheel. So I was convinced, I think, with Dave's argument that, you know, this is something fresh and this is what we want from a comedy rom-com films. You know, they're often sort of pretty by the book. So, getting something a bit different is a good thing. But not quite sure if it's always getting what it's going for. I mean, I'm not totally, you know, it's going for cringe, but it's also got the heart. I don't know if it quite works. This does seem like it's an enjoyable enough film to get you to the end. but I don't think it's good enough to be a particularly memorable film. And it doesn't really sound like the film itself kind of lives up to its out-of-the-box premise and concept. You know, it's nothing wrong with doing this kind of like crazy concept, but it doesn't really sound like the rest of the film sort of justifies that. And I think, from what's being said, I think No Hard Feelings is kind of destined to be lost at the bottom of the streaming algorithm. So I think it's a fun watch to get you through to the end. I think some nice little bits and bobs, but I don't think this will be remembered past this year from what I've heard. So I'm going to put it on the shit list.
Okay, thank you very much for that lovely judgment there, Alex. And let's get some genuine feelings. So firstly, Ozzy, did you watch the film?
Did watch the film.
Fuck me. Well, what did you think of it?
I thought it was quite funny. I thought it was an easy watch. I think it's... I think it's better than some of the films on our hit list.
Oh no, yeah, but Ozzy, you can't. You know what I mean, you can't. Crossroads. As soon as Crossroads went on the hit list,
take that right this second.
We stopped being a serious film podcast.
Crossroads is genuinely a good film.
How exactly. Dare you. Do you know what I mean? Exactly. This, our opinions don't matter, even to ourselves. Do you know what I mean?
That's kind of the point of the podcast, though. Our opinions don't matter. It's about what you can argue on the day.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
But no, I think it's a good film. I think it is genuinely funny. I think I can see why it would end up on the shit list. But I think it's a good film, better than a lot of things even I've put on the hit list. And I'm, you know, pretty wanton, to be fair. So
probably worse than Gattaca, isn't it, Ozzy? Wouldn't you say?
I'd say, Ozzy, you're probably responsible for about 85% of shit films going on the hit list. And I'm probably responsible for the other 15%.
But that said, I'm pretty happy with 60% of Ozzy's calls. So,
right. So, Dave, what's your genuine opinion?
I couldn't disagree with Alex's summing up, to be honest with you. There's nothing really to make it stand out. It's an interesting concept. It's certainly fresh. I'll give it that. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a hell of a lot more than I thought I would, to be honest with you. And yeah, I actually quite like the film. I thought some genuinely funny moments, some good performances. I liked it. One day I might watch it again. But I couldn't disagree with Alex when he said it might kind of get lost into the ether a little bit. It's not going to be a standout classic, I wouldn't say. And I think he's right. I don't think it is. I would put it on the hit list because longevity doesn't really matter as much in my judgment. But I understand where Alex came from and why he's made that call. For me, hit list, I would say. But no, I understand the reasoning.
Thank you very much, Dave. So I don't think that it has a great amount of heart, to be honest. And I think that the premise is absolutely bonkers. And some of the negatives that I was saying, I do agree with. But on the whole, I really enjoyed the film. I thought it was really funny. I liked it. You know, I thought Jennifer Lawrence was great in it. I would have put it on the hit list, to be honest. And I liked, you know, what Dave was saying as well about the message with regards to like losing your virginity as well. I mean, how often do we see these sort of coming of age films that center solely on kids trying to lose their virginity before they go to college or whatever? And I thought it was quite nice that, you know what, he didn't in the end. And it was more about him becoming more in touch with himself and becoming more confident within himself rather than, you know, losing his virginity, which was important to his parents, which once again shows the generational gap. You know, like Matthew Broderick in one of the most famous coming of age teen comedies of the 80s, where probably back in that day, that would have been really important to them. Like, you've got to lose your virginity before you go to college. Whereas here, it's more about being comfortable within yourself. And I really like that message, to be honest. And I thought that, as I said, it was pretty funny. That's why I didn't really say much about the comedy in it, because I thought Jennifer Lawrence was great. I thought the concept was fucking wild, but they just about pulled it off in my eyes.
Yeah, it's a very brave film to make. You got to give them that. It's imagine trying to pitch this, you know? It's very brave. And yeah, like I really like the satire element of it. It's smarter than you think it's going to be.
Yeah, I think it genuinely did have layers to it, which I wasn't expecting. I thought it was a bit cleverer than
that. Layered again.
I was thinking of going straight for the layered, but
do it, Aussie.
Yeah, and I wanted to be even cleverer just to justify it, but I'm not. It's too late in the night, so you'll have to settle for the two that have already gone.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Aussie. So higher or lower than our previous film on trial, which was Evil Dead Rise, which scored 84 and 76% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's 84 critical and 76 audience.
Lower on both for me.
Yeah,
lower and higher.
Aussie's spot on. 70% critical, but 87% audience. Oof, I think it was one that audience has really responded well to. And I would actually disagree. I think that this might really find its footing on streaming services. I think it is that type of film that, you know, as Aussie said, you can just put on. I'm like, oh, Saturday night, whack on a film, 9 o'clock. And you know what? It's a good laugh. So, yeah, we will see. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll do a celebratory 30-year anniversary.
of that film.
Of No Hard Feelings.
Of our judgment of No Hard Feelings.
I'm not planning to live that long, to be honest.
I'd be surprised if I managed 30 months. Now, so yeah, just to say thank you very much, guys, for all your arguments, and Alex for your judgment. Thank you very much to everybody who has listened to this episode. We really, really do appreciate you all taking the time out to listen to us babble on about films each 2 weeks. And if you want more Films on Trial content, check out filmsontrial.co.uk. Listen to us on any platform where you get your podcasts. And check us out on all of the socials, at Film Trials on Twitter and Films on Trial on everything else. We continue our best of 2023 season next week as we put the adrenaline pumping action movie Mission Impossible 7 on trial. Looking forward to that one. But what have we learned in the meantime? Well, just to say that we cannot categorically state that Nicolas Cage pawned his Oscar for Jim Beam.
Then why have I got it right here, Gav?
It is likely.
And our initial assumptions about the film have been proven wrong, as No Hard Feelings is much more layered. Or should that be layered, Aussie? Ultimately, No Hard Feelings is on their shit list, and we're going to be back directly in those ears in 2 weeks' time when we put Mission Impossible 7 on trial. Goodbye.
I think that's why Gav reckons it'll win, is that it's easily a two-screener. You can have your phone out and still enjoy the film.
I
would put it on the shit list just for that statement. If you'd said that during the arguments. Two-screener, honestly, Ozzy, that's so upsetting to me.
Ozzy, it did sound like you were trying to tank defense. And I think if you would have said that, that would have been the final nail.
Honestly, I'd have just shouted it shitless and then left the call, I think.
Yeah. What was the point there? I was like nodding along, smiling, and then I was like, uh-oh. He's just referenced a Sarah Jessica Parker movie. What the fuck?